Hi, my name is Johnny. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups, and it is my pleasure to introduce John and Ernie, our speakers for tonight.
All right. I'm John S., and this is Ernie.
And I'm Ernie.
And we're going to probably alternate back and forth here a little bit. So we're going to leave the chat on. So if you have questions or comments or just criticisms, we're good with that. So a little bit of background for me. I grew up in a family where my father ran an auto parts store and a garage. My mother was the bookkeeper. They liked to drink, but they lived through World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, the Vietnam War, the Korean War. And so drinking was a big, important part of their lives. And they treated me well. They really did. They loved me. And what happened, though, was I made some assumptions. And the assumptions are what made me the Al-Anon that I am today. I assumed that if somebody told you what was bothering them, that meant that you had to fix it. I assumed that if you wanted some self-esteem, you had to either buy it from people or try and get it by giving them compliments or doing anything you could in a relationship. I believed that, you know, whatever somebody told me to do, I needed to do it. And by the time that I got out of high school, I was a huge disaster. And that's partly why this background is that we're sitting in a World War II submarine. That's kind of the inside of my brain. That's what it looks like. I call it the good ship dysfunction. And so I was a mess. And I was particularly a mess in any kind of relationship. So that made me a very miserable person. At one point, I decided that I would kill myself. The only thing that saved me was I couldn't find the bullets. Once again, being disorganized saved my life. It saved my life a couple of times. At a certain point, I realized that I had to get some help, and I talked to a therapist for almost a half of a day, and I realized that that was my first inkling that my life was unmanageable and that I was not able to fix it. Ernie and I were just talking about trying to fix things that are broken with something that's broken. And that was where I was. And so every relationship I had was a disaster. And every friendship I had was not based on any kind of foundation. It was like walking on sand. So when I came to these rooms, I was in desperate shape. And what I learned was that I could hear what other people had to say and that I could speak whatever I had and everyone would listen to it. I was reading the news the other day and they had an article about this guy in Turkey who was out with his friends and he got drunk and wandered into the forest. And he fell asleep and his friends, after 5 or 6 hours, they called the police and they had a search party. And the search party came through the forest and he woke up and he joined the search party to look for himself. And that is what this meeting is for me. Every week I join the search party and I'm looking for myself and I've been finding myself and it's not bad. It is a good thing. So I'm going to switch over to Ernie. And if you have any comments or questions, go ahead and go through the chat.
Hi, I'm Ernie. This is really weird talking into a computer. This is not my thing. So my history is I got married, I got divorced, I got married, I got divorced, and then I came to this meeting. That's pretty well how my life went. When I came into the meeting, I didn't know how broken I was, because I was sitting in a room. There was probably 20 of us at the most in there. I mean, everybody knew everybody's name, and you were, at that time, you would go around the room and share, because in an hour and a half with 20 people, everybody could share. And it was great. It was really great. I found that I was going to Al-Anon for about a year, and I found the meeting actually through Willie's mother-in-law somehow. And she said, go to this meeting. There's this great big guy, he's leading it, and go. And she sent me there. So I went there, and there was Willie sitting at the chair with the chalkboard behind him. And the guys that he named, Jack was there, and Chris P, Lee. I don't know who else is here in the meeting tonight, but like Willie said, there's probably seven of us that are still around. I didn't see how it could help me. I could see how I could help the meeting. Willie didn't need help. He did good. Lee did really good. I've worked on Jack a long time. So I keep coming back. Now, let's jump to today. After the 27 years or so that I've been here, the program to me is about honesty and truth and the perception of things. I can't, you know, when people say, hey, can you explain the meeting in one word? And, you know, I don't think I can. And I thought about it today, and I guess the one word would be, it's one word and it's one letter and it's I. This program is about me and how far I want to take it and how far I want to go. I choose to be happy. I use this meeting and the program to get me to that attitude and to have that attitude, that gratitude attitude, and that keeps me happy. I play around a lot. I enjoy the little twist in things and the perceptions, but I guess what I'm trying to say, for me, there is the reason and the real reason I do things. Let me give you an example. I am here tonight speaking because Johnny asked me to speak. That's the reason. The real reason is I couldn't think of one way to get out of it. There was no way I could save face and not do this. So here I am. And I live my life, and I know that there are two reasons to everything I do. And the program has given me the insight and the awareness to see it and to use it and to believe it. The things that I do, there's always two reasons. And most of the reasons I'm involved in it. Like when somebody does something because he did it for the right reason, there's always another reason. It just happened to be the right reason at the time. You do it because it's the right thing to do. That's like a fluke for me. I mean, it's not that I don't do them, but there's usually something else in the back of my mind that I've got going. So we decided to do this like this because we go on bike rides and then we sit and eat lunch and we have these discussions and they kind of go like this. John is my sponsor, and you can see our styles are completely different. Our visions are different, and yet we sit down and talk, and reality comes out, and we learn something.
By the way, we got in the chat, it says, Are we going to go through a Bing 54 carb needle settings?
What is that?
Personally, I'm an Amol carburetor guy. I don't know anything about Bing carburetors.
No.
And I think your higher power really has to help you with that one.
Who is that?
Juan.
Oh.
There you go. Anyway.
So, well, I've lost train of thought. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead. So what I have is, these are my notes. They're just sheets of paper with things written on them that I wrote today. And the one that's come up is worry about the future. This comes from my new book that I'm writing, How to Be a Miserable Person. You'll find it at any funeral home. So worrying about the future is one of my hobbies. I do it at like 4 o'clock in the morning, every morning. And one of the things I learned about that was that something that Willie told me. He said, when you worry about a problem that hasn't happened yet, you can't solve the problem because every problem has the solution wrapped up in it. So if a problem hasn't happened yet, the solution hasn't happened yet and you can't see it. And I did have an example of that one time. I was worrying about money, which I do sometimes incessantly. And I got the next day, I got a huge pay raise. And I thought that night when I went to bed, I thought, I'm good now. I got enough money. I don't have to worry about money. I got up at 4 a.m. I was worried about my car tires. Are they worn out? So I'm a heat seeking missile for worry. And what I've learned is that I can talk to somebody else about what I'm worried about and I can get their perspective. I talk to Roger about what I'm worried about and he tells me something that's completely has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. And then my worry sounds like it's just nothing. And it usually it is. And so do I stop worrying? No, because I'm a heat seeking missile for worry. But what I do is I realize that I have a higher power and I can tell my higher power what that worry is, and I can accept the discomfort of having it and live on, keep going. So that's that.
Remember I hear the name Roger, when I call John and have problems with my marriage, my wife, if it gets too bad, then it's you know what, you have to call Roger. And Roger's answer always the same thing, try to be a better husband. And that is so hard to do. It's so easy to say and so hard to do. And it's, once again, it's perspective and it's how I see it. My wife packed a box full of clothes, packed her bags full of clothes. I took her to the airport about 3 weeks ago and she said, I want to take care of a younger man. And she left. Now, in reality, what happened was we have a kid that's pregnant and she's due and it's a boy. So she flew to North Carolina to take care of this baby and her dog. But that's not how if I tell it the story that I can tell it, maybe I'm going to get free meals out of it. I don't know. If I just say a regular story and everything's happy, then there's no sympathy sex. There's no nothing, man. There's just life for me alone with my dog. So we talk a lot. Anyway, this program to me is, I found my sense of humor again in it. I found, and I see, when I see people laughing and joking, and I know what they've gone through because I've gone through a lot of it, and I'm at the meetings and I hear what they've gone through, and you can see the healing come in as they start to smile. And it's one of the ironic things of our meeting, our 7 o'clock meeting, men's, because these guys, the newcomers, welcome all the newcomers, no matter, first of all, welcome you guys that's only been here a couple times, even a year. We see you guys come in, you tell us your story, and everybody in the room laughs. And it isn't because of any other reason than the fact of we've been there and now we're at a different place and we're hoping you to come join us. And when you keep coming back, it seems to work because I don't work this program hard, man. I mean, I go to our meeting. I don't do a lot of reading. I don't do a lot of phone calls. I seem to like caught on to, you know, I went through the steps and I have my favorite step. I like step seven. I still carry cards that I wrote for my character defects. I still have them today and I've gone through years of them, you know, 27 years of these things. And I wrote all my defects down and they're still here. I don't know if you guys can see this, but that's what's left of them. Except for the procrastination card, which looks brand new because I just keep putting it back. But the other ones are pretty well worn out. And I've gone through several decks of these things and it keeps me grounded. Where'd I go? Oh, so I'm going to turn it back over to John.
Okay. So my next piece of paper says, changing my perspective changes who I am. I have a perspective. I used to have a perspective that everything happened to me, and I was the victim, and somebody was going to get me, and I was going to be in trouble. And to a certain extent, I still have that, but I found that I can change that perspective. That's one of the most valuable things I've learned in this program, is that I can change my perspective. And I do it by borrowing somebody else's perspective. I can talk to somebody and they can tell me how they see this situation, because I see it through, it's like I'm looking through a soda straw. All I see is this one narrow perspective. And that's part of that is also acceptance. If I don't accept a situation, I can't see it any other way than it's not happening to me. If I can actually surrender and accept the situation, then I begin to see possibilities. I talked to a mechanic one time and I said, how much torque can I put on this bolt when I tighten it down? And he said, well, the easy way to find that out is put enough torque on it to break it and then back off a half turn. And so, you know, wisdom from the mechanic. And so as I've changed my perspective, I become a different person. As I accept a different perspective, I become a different person. And that has been invaluable to me. Here I see another one. How does your higher power surprise you? You know, my higher power, I've learned in this program that I have to define my higher power for myself. And what I learned from that is my version of my higher power is 3.6 today. My higher power goes through different versions. The first higher power I had was version zero. And that was a cold, distant, judgmental higher power that only reminded me that I'm just a worm. And as my higher power went through these different versions, my higher power got closer and my higher power became loving. And my higher power became something that I could rely on. And, you know, these version numbers, what they are is they're various things that I have removed from my ability to become closer to that higher power. So as I remove an obstacle, the version number goes up. I had a situation where I got an infection and I had a fever and I could not urinate for about 3 days. And I was in agony. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning and I was just dying. And I knew that I could go see the doctor at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I talked to my higher power and I said, look, I get that you can't make the pain go away, but can you get me to 8 o'clock in the morning? And the interesting thing was, it didn't stop hurting, but I could make it. That's what I got. My higher power doesn't give me parking spaces or win the lottery for me, but when I'm up against it, I get what I need. That's what I get. I get what I need. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. So I can't wait for 3.7. 3.7 is going to be fantastic. It just, but that it's up to me to get there. It's up to me to remove that obstacle so I can get to that higher version number. So
I see my higher power working in me. Same thing. When I get stressed out, I'll get up and I'll talk to my higher power. I talk to my higher power every day. But when I talk to him, I keep my hands open, because when your hands are shut, he can't put anything in your hands for you, and he can't take in anything away from you. So I guess it's just a symbol for me, but I keep my hands open, and my higher power changes as I change. And my higher power has a wicked sense of humor. I mean, there are things that there's no way in the world I should have came out of these things unscathed. And I came out of them happy and fun and just moved on. It isn't that my life is great. It isn't that my life is my life. And whatever I make of it is up to me. And that's how I see my higher power. I see my higher power as helping me see an alternative to whatever it is I need to change. I guess that would be about the best way I could explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, everybody has their own higher power, man, woman, beast, doesn't matter what it is. But in this program, you learn that is a key factor in it for me. As lazy as I am, that's one thing I do.
Okay. I got something about a higher power. Part of having a higher power is for me having faith. And faith is the ability to believe in something that you can't see or touch or smell. And so I couldn't find a prayer on that. So I wrote one myself, and I'm going to read that to you. God, help me have expanding circles of faith. Faith in myself, my judgment, my purpose, my program as I work it. Faith in Leah that her love is real and her anger isn't personal. Faith in my sponsor that he will listen and share his identical problems so we can heal together. Faith in my therapist that her acceptance of me and what she says is not a cure but a signpost. Faith in my coworkers that I understand that they work alongside me and that they govern themselves. Faith in my friends that I can learn how to accept their interest in me. Faith in those who I think don't like me. So eventually I can learn the truth that the dislike is not what they are most interested in. Faith in the stranger that they live with me in this world and may be friends someday. Faith in my higher power that I may give away more control over what I can't control.
I don't pray like that, guys. I'm not even close to that. I like walk my dog and talk to a higher power, and I seem to be okay with it.
Let's see what it is. Oh, somebody says, gotta go be a good son and take care of my mom. Okay, good for you, man. Excellent.
So let's talk about some of the slogans. When I got in, when I got into the program, I heard the slogans and I hated them. I mean, right at first you really like them, until then after a while, they're so repetitious, I just got tired of them, because they were just the same thing. I did not know that they were the solutions to my issues and problems at the time. They were just words on a piece of paper that everybody said at the same, you know. Let me see, what are some of the slogans? Let's see. The You can be right or you can be happy. You know, the standard thing is being right makes me happy. The slogans now, they mean something to me because I'm finding myself repeating them to other people and to myself when I'm in a situation, when I'm in some kind of an argument or a conversation with somebody that I'm not agreeing with, then I find myself using the slogans, and I just kind of like repeat them to myself in my mind so that I don't say anything out loud that doesn't need to be said. I was, after many years of this program, and through sponsors and stuff like that, I was taught whatever I needed to say, I need to be able to say it in 3 sentences and 6 at the most, and keep it everything in the I sentence, right? Bring everything from that, no judgment, no you, no, I think you should do this. You have to say, this is how I am feeling, and this is why I'm feeling this way. And it's worked out pretty well. This thing boggles me, and it boggles me to this day. This program teaches you, the 7th tradition says to be self-reliant. And that's kind of what I've learned to do. And I would say, like 3 or 4 weeks ago, my wife came up to me and said, I know you don't need me. And it's like, it like dropped me. It's like, what? Because I wanted to be defensive. She goes, I'm like your mom. I mean, basically you just, you know, you need me to cook and clean and go around. I'm like your mom. I know that you don't need me. And then she said, and that's why I'm staying with you. And it boggled me, because it's everything that we try to do, right? To learn to not be codependent and to take care of ourselves and not rely on somebody else's emotions and stuff to get by in life. And somebody that I care deeply about said exactly what I've been trying to do. And it threw me back, and it's like, and it's still, I still run over it in my mind today. And it's like, so you're staying with me because you know I don't need you, but you just love me. And basically you're telling me the same thing, right? It's okay that I don't need you, right? And thank you for your love. And it's such a pure feeling that, and I've never had it before. And like I said, it took me a while to get used to it. And I still get lost on it. I'm still lost on it right now. But that's part of my life today. And that's part of this program. And I have men I can talk to. And they probably don't understand it.
It's hard to understand. It's hard to understand.
Why me?
But, you know, I got another thing here. This came up. It says, take things personally. And, you know, I have taken things personally all my life. And I went to a therapist one time and I said, everybody hates me. And she said, that is not true. According to the statistical curve, a small number of people do hate you. And a small number of people love you no matter what you do. Everybody else is thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about you. And I have learned that that's very, very true. And that when somebody says something to me, many times it's their reality. And I have to honor their reality. And that other people think differently than I do. They live things differently than I do. I just have to accept that. And I have to honor it. You know, I went to the Hill Street Cafe one time and I sat down and I said, what's happening, man? And to this guy, and he said, you know, the earth's 6,000 years old. And I thought, do I want to go there for hours arguing with this guy? Because I'm not going to change what he believes. And I just said, you know, the chicken fried steak is not too bad. And we got along just fine, you know. And I had another situation come up one time. This taught me more about friendship than anything else. I was at the Hill Street Cafe, and I was with a person that I knew from this meeting. And I made a joke at his expense. And it was such a good joke that I repeated it. And he turned to me and he got close to my ear and he said, John, I love you, but fuck off. And I thought, I just had this rush of shame. And then he was fine. We got along just fine. And what that taught me was, I crossed over a boundary. He told me what the boundary was. He still loves me. That is something that in my reality, I thought if I insulted somebody, then it was over. We had nothing, nothing again. I could not be friends again. So he taught me what another kind of reality is. Let's see. There's something in the chat here. The way you've talked about your belief in everyone's inherent value that cannot be lost and changed my life. Thank you. Yes, that's one thing that I need to talk about. Everybody has inherent value. And this is something that I learned from this program that,
what is that?
Our core value is what we're born with as people. And it never changes. It's never diminished. So no matter what we do, we don't lose that core value. And it doesn't mean that you're better than anybody else. It means that everybody has it and it's exactly the same. It's what your God gave you. And so you may be ashamed of what you do, but you cannot be ashamed of the value that you have as a human being. And I firmly believe that. And I think I see people very differently now than I used to. I used to be very judgmental, and I'm not so much anymore. I may judge you for what you're wearing, but I won't judge your core value because you have the same that I have. So there you go.
That's way too deep for me. I'm like, deep as a pothole, man.
Tell us about your HP and your motorcycle adventures together.
Oh, well, we rode Mulholland the other day and then had lunch and then and actually talked what we were going to talk about here. As you can see, we didn't get very far. I think that the guys that ride with the Thundering Horde in the group, they're definitely very special, and the lunches that we go to, and there's a camaraderie in this 7 o'clock group anyway, right? Everybody's involved in it, and there's a bunch of like offshoots of different sports that the guys, because I noticed that the younger guys are doing something else. Most of the guys that are riding are a little bit older. Well, Jack and John are a lot older, but they've been around for a while. Seems like you guys shouldn't ride. So I don't know what to say to that one.
There he goes. So what role has good sponsorship played in your personal recovery in Al-Anon? You know, I've learned very interesting things about sponsorship. I've been doing an experiment for the last few years. I decided that I would work the 12 steps with 12 sponsors. And so I chose a sponsor for each step. And that experiment has been amazing. It's been incredible. So I chose one person and I said, would you sponsor me on the first step? And the second, then another person for the second step and another person for the third step. What it did was it allowed me to experience, I'm up to 10 now. It allowed me to experience 10 different people in 10 different ways of working the steps, and got to show me a huge amount of the love that they could give me. I don't recommend it for everybody, but for me, it was a powerful experience. So their short-term sponsorship gave me all kinds of new perspectives. How about you?
Sponsorship is everything. And it goes deeper than just having one sponsor. I've had two of my sponsors have died. Not because of anything I did.
You didn't kill them?
No.
Good. That's good.
I didn't call them that much. But it seems like everybody in the program, everybody in that meeting can be a sponsor to you. It all depends. It seems the way that the sponsorship works for me is when I say it out loud to my sponsor, then I hear it. And if he makes me repeat it, then there's no excuse for me not to hear it. And then from there, he's not figuring out any of my issues. He's mostly, it's mostly a sounding board. And like I said, some of the times when he says, hey, you should call Roger, then I know that I'm not in a good spot. And I'm not really hearing, or I hear it and I don't want to act on it now. There are some phenomenal sponsors and men in this group that have been around forever. And they are, I mean, phenomenal. And any of them are open to sponsor anybody. There should be nobody in this program, in this meeting, without a sponsor.
And the great thing about sponsoring is you really don't have to sponsor them more than the first three steps, because when they get to the fourth step, they usually just leave. So
let's talk about the steps.
Okay.
The steps are everything like everything else, right? I've worked the steps several times. I'm not gung-ho on going to conventions. I'm not gung-ho on speaking, I'm not gung-ho on any of that stuff. It's not that I'm lazy. It's just not me. This program has worked for me because I've held on to a couple of things. The seventh step, the humbly remove our shortcomings, seems to be, that's why I have those cards. That's what those cards are, my shortcomings, or character defects, or whatever you want to call them, but I keep them in my back pocket so I remind myself of what I'm doing and really what I'm asking my higher power. The steps are
what show one of those cards. What's written on the card?
If I would have brought the procrastination one, they could have read it.
That's true.
Here, ego, egotistical, and acceptance.
Okay.
So these things have been carried. I've been carrying them for 25 years. Some of them have gone through the wash. Some of them, like I said, only the one card, only one card looks new. Because every time I come to it, I'm not ready to do it. So I just kind of put it back, which is probably the wrong thing to do, I know.
What card is that one?
Procrastination.
Procrastination. Oh, you'll get to it. You'll get to it one of these days. Yeah.
No rush. So I think for me, because I pushed to go through these steps when I was first in the program, and 1, 2, and 3 I had down already. The fourth step and the fifth step were like mind changing. The fourth step, to write down all of that stuff, all of the things that happened to me in my life and how I perceived them and what I did about them, right, was tough. But the fifth step was so freeing that it's worth the fourth step. It's one of those things where it is so good, I do it again. I do it again in a minute, right? To the newcomers, go through the steps, man. You don't have to do them perfect. Go through them and come back and go through them again, right? But what John was talking about, I guess the self-esteem and the core value, you get that from the steps. You get self-worth, you get self-esteem, you get self-confidence, you get yourself. You plain and simple get yourself, and I've never had that before. And through the years that I've had it, then from that, then I just work forward, right? Then if something else I want, I work toward it. But I enjoy who I am today. And that, it's not easy to say that. I have a lot of character defects, but I still enjoy my life. I enjoy myself. I learned so much about myself, and with my wife taking care of the grandkid, I learn a lot more because now I'm home alone with a dog and there's no one to talk to. And I find that I talk out loud at home a lot. I don't know if that's normal, but I do. So be it.
So we got another question. Are you sponsoring others or are you looking forward to being a sponsor? I sponsor several people. As I said, my sponsoring program is a little weird because what I do is I spend 1 week on the first three steps, one week on each step. And then the fourth step takes as long as you want. That's usually when people leave. But there have been a few who have stuck with it and gone through the fourth step, and then I'm committed to do all the rest. But that is, it's been a wonderful thing. And those people, I see those people and I talk to those people. I consider them my friends and I love them all. And the ones who have drifted off, you know, they'll find another path, but I got them to start and we all learn something. I learn more from sponsoring people than I get from almost anything else. So
I sponsor people, sometimes a lot of people, sometimes not so many people. I mean, it varies through the years. Same thing with John said, you know, you become friends and one way or the other, you love the person, they love you.
Yeah.
And very fulfilling, very, I don't know, it's a good way to give back. This is, the program is about, a lot of it is giving back.
Mm-hmm. And learning that, you know, I've told people before, they've been in intractable situations and I've said, you know, I know what you should do. And I know how you should do it, but I'm not going to tell you because I'm not supposed to. I can't, and I'm not supposed to. You wouldn't hear what I said anyway. And the other thing is, you already know what you need to do. Everybody that's ever talked to me, they know what their problem is. They can't hear themselves. And so they have to tell me what it is so they can hear themselves. And that's how they get it. That's how it comes. It's like we're all sitting at the bottom of a well and we don't know that's where we are, but that's where we are. And we can get out anytime, but we don't think we can. So the miracle is that it happens, but you have to keep doing it. And that's all you have to do.
I think some of the miracle is when you hear that, then you kind of thank God that's not me anymore. Right.
Yeah.
Because you've walked through there. I think there's some kind of an Al-Anon saying where you walk down the block, you walk down the street and fall in the hole. Right. And then you walk down the street and you look down the hole and then you fall in. And then eventually, as you get healthy, you don't even have to walk down that street anymore. So it doesn't matter if there's a hole there or not. And I think I personally learn from not only my mistakes, but the things that I do right, right? And I try to learn from the things that I do right. When I refer to anything, we, they, right? It's me. I just don't want to point the finger at myself. but it's, if it's we, they, any of those pronouns, man, it's me, it's I. But I'm not one to point fingers.
Okay, here's one. How has the practice of Al-Anon's traditions helped improve your relationships with your family?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
My wife left me for a younger man.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's a tradition all by itself, isn't it? You've been married more than a few times already. Okay, good.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, well, I think the tradition of we're self-supporting.
That's a Jack question.
No,
all the people in the meeting, right? Jack is the tradition guy. Jack and Willie know this program inside and out.
That's
They've
true.
Got it memorized. I don't know if anybody's ever heard Jack do the history of this program, but it's unbelievable. And same with Willie. When Willie talks, it comes from a wisdom and it comes from an understanding, right? Yeah. That few people have, because he's been around and he's used this program, and the people in this program have seen him, right, on different stages of his life, up, down, and always back up again. It's unbelievable what this thing can do.
That's right.
And this meeting, I refer to these guys because I've known them for the 27 years that, and I haven't been able to help them. And I try, but I get a lot of help from them.
Yeah. Well, I have another piece of paper here. It says act now, limited time offer, or give it a day. One of the things that I have dealt with for all my life is being impetuous and making impetuous decisions, and having to really, really, I have to do it right now, I have to buy it right now, or you know, my hair is on fire and I don't have much hair left, so it's burned off. But I've also learned that I can give it a day. Most anything that I have to decide on, I can wait a day, 24 hours. And it's so interesting because the next day, my perspective has changed. I have another perspective. Maybe I really do want to buy that leather jacket. Maybe after a day, I still want to buy it. But at least I can say, okay, I gave myself time to cool off. And one of the great things about this program is that I can give myself that time. That's my gift to myself. I don't have to instantly react. It's the reacting that gets me in trouble. So.
I steam.
There you go.
I don't react. I just get mad.
There you go.
And then I have to wait for that. However, when I'm mad, I can get a whole lot of work done. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a character. I don't know what it is. It's a defect. It's a human condition. And I know when I get angry, I can get a whole lot of work done compared to being in a good mood. And then I stop and talk to everybody and I don't get anything done. So being mad isn't so bad, or I'm just justifying it, which is probably another one of my cards.
There you go. There you go. So it's 8:25. I have lost track of where we're supposed to be.
It's really weird talking to a bunch of little squares and not hearing any kind of feedback, guys.
Yeah, it is kind of strange, but there you go. I see Michael. Okay, Michael, thank you. That's good. So, well, let me see what my cards have to say here.
Doesn't the meeting end?
Never. We're here forever.
Willie, what time do we stop? Or Jack? Or Mike?
10 more minutes?
It says 8:55, but I'm pretty sure that's a typo.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, we can go all night.
It should be 8:30. So.
Okay, right. So we're 8:26.
So you stop at 8:25.
Whoever asked, when we're on our bikes and we stop and eat lunch, what it's like, this conversation is almost identical to what it's like. Other than we don't have.
Yeah.
Other than we go, look at that dumb guy riding that Harley.
Yeah.
We do that a lot, you know.
But not when Johnny's there.
No, not when Johnny's there.
Okay.
So we're good.
Yeah.
We're there, man.
Thank you guys very much.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting us. Thank you for having us in your home.
It was a pleasure.
Hopefully we get back to this meeting, man. I got to get back to this meeting in person.
Yeah, I agree. Someday we'll be out of this.
Someday. Let's thank both Ernie and John for their wonderful share. And you guys only get to put up with it for this night. We get to put up. We've been getting to have to put up with this for the last 20 plus years. These two together, just funny. And you guys just got a little bit of it. We get a lot of them at the All States and things. So I love them both. They both are very, very dear and a very dear part and very special part of this meeting. Just so very special.